Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has a sexually transmitted disease. It's Richard Herring! Oh, yes, thank you! Welcome. Welcome to Series 10. Count them. Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Oh, I was down at the Junior Gazette the other day. There's a guy there called Colin. He's really cool. He called it rehearsal story. So I don't know if that's going to catch on. I do have a sexually transmitted disease. Well, in a way, I've caught a virus off my daughter, who I created with sex. That's what they don't warn you about. They're the worst. Because it's an ongoing... Once you've got a baby, there's just disease for the next 10 years. It's just awful. So whatever they get, you get. It's really horrible. Thank God I only record one of these a week, because the idea of having to talk to two people tonight would be... I mean, the second one. Yes, thank you very much if you donated to the Kickstarter. We've paid both for Series 9 and Series 10, which is lucky, because we'd already done Series 9, so if we hadn't got the money for that, we would have been fucked. Thank you so much. It's really great that you want to support it in that way. I'll talk about that in the second one. I've forgotten to bring something on. There will be a mention of... We've got some product placement. It's kind of hidden behind this chair at the moment. But so we're away. That's one of the Kickstarter rewards. It feels like ages since we did these, but the news is all the same. Brexit's still happening, apparently. There's been no bad effects of Brexit yet, though, so that's good, isn't it? Because it hasn't happened yet! We're still in the EU! Stay in! Democracy has kind of self-imploded and punched... Everyone's sort of voting to punch themselves in their face and then say, yeah, we won! That means we can never do anything we want ever again. We're interested to see what happens in America with Donald Trump. I'm very excited about that one. I've kind of got to the point where I kind of want him to win. Don't you?
come on, it's going to be fucking awesome. We're all dead anyway. We're all going to die anyway, so we might as well go out with him. I'm very obsessed with CJ from Eggheads. I can't get over. I talked about it on the bonus podcast I did, but he's been arrested for his imaginary crime. I don't know what it is. It's a terrifying thing to be made, you know, make up a crime and then have to go to prison. You have to go to imaginary prison. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that. We have a Dutchman in later who can talk about whether he's ever saw CJ stalking the canals. See, find out if he was ever pushed in. Apparently 12 more, in the year CJ from Eggheads was in Amsterdam, 12 more people than usual died in canals. I'm no mathematician, but that must. Right, look, we're going to crack on because we've got a fantastic first guest. In fact, researching this guest just made me think, oh, what the fuck have I done with my life? Why? It's a real way to make you think, fuck yeah, I really wasted the last 20 years, because he really hasn't. You'll know him best. He was the former classical music columnist for Gramophone magazine. That is why there's a lot of Gramophone magazine subscribers in tonight wondering why he isn't doing that anymore. Well, we're going to find out. Will you please welcome Armando Iannucci, ladies and gentlemen? There he is. Sit down. Drinking beer. Sit down, there's a microphone there.
Alright, thank you.
Good.
I didn't know whether to touch you or not.
Well, you know, you've been in a little room backstage with me, so you've already got you've got whatever I've got.
I know it will go out on the internet as well.
Yeah. It'd be good if it goes online with this virus. It's not too bad. You must have had, you've got three children, yes. So you've been through all this three times.
Oh, yes. Vomiting, the works, every orifice.
Vomiting out of every orifice.
Vomiting out of three orifices. And that's just the children.
It is. It isn't just the children, because it's also us as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. No, so why... So why haven't they worked out that it's kids that incubate these things and yet adults get it?
Yeah.
And yet, I don't know. I'm sure there's some... this isn't going anywhere.
No, it isn't. No. It must be. But we should have had it all.
No.
But the new children create new diseases that we didn't have.
Perhaps
that's the beauty of...
Perhaps today's newly announced Nobel Prize winner for medicine can come up with an answer. Because
I think if I should win the Nobel Prize for something is someone who can make quite hot microwave food instantaneously warm enough for a child to eat without burning their mouth. That would be... That's the invention I want to have.
Right.
Because you've got to wait and then do a lot of that.
Yeah. Or I say, could you just not... Oh, no, that wouldn't work. I was going to say, could you just not put it on so much... But then that defeats the point of microwaving, doesn't it?
They could just suck it out of the freezer. Just suck it until it's...
Yeah. Just, here's a chicken lolly.
What happened to the old Gramophone magazine?
The old Gramophone magazine. What happened there? Well, it was something I did just on my sort of day off.
Yeah.
I know what happened. I used to write one of these. It was once a month. I used to write a column for Gramophone magazine on classical music. But then I did a film called In the Loop, and it was it just took up a lot of time. And the edit afterwards took up a lot of time. And I had to stop doing lots of things just to kind of concentrate on...
Is Gramophone magazine still going?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Do you think they should change their name to something? Yes. people can actually still
do
listen.
Do you know, they've thought about
it
and they thought, no. I tell you something, though. The other reason I stopped was the classical music fraternity. It's just the worst bunch of cunts I've ever found. Once a year, I'd get invited to Gramophone Christmas party. And I thought, well, I'd go along. And it was worse than you could, because it was full of like obscure academic classical music critics.
Yeah.
Who all hate each other and all assume that you share their hatred for that other person. You know, it was really worse than any sort of sub-college politicking. It was horrible.
Yeah.
And I'd always leave these Gramophone magazine classical music Christmas party drinks just feeling just unclean and dirty and disgusted with myself, really, for the world I'd got myself into. You know, so that was another reason.
That was it. All of this. Look, so a lot of comedians get into drugs and
hookers. I slid desperately into the dark world of appalling music critics. You know, yeah.
But you've always liked classical music. I have, since you were young. And everything.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's a reaction. You know, I used to share a room with my brother who was into Lou Reed and David Bowie and Rolling Stones and all that. And I think you just react. This is the way I explain it. You kind of react against what's been forced out. And so I just thought, well, this is fine, but it didn't feel like me. And for some reason, I just remember it. Some music lesson at school. Teacher put on a piece of, I think it was The Planets or something like that, and I just thought, oh, I like that sound. I want to hear more of that, and I just got more and more enthusiastic about
it. You must
have
the only school kid who listened to The Planets and wasn't laughing at Uranus when that came up. I love this. This is fantastic.
Yeah, they all sing in Uranus. It's a chorus of female voices at the end of Uranus.
That's right.
Yeah.
I must dig it out and have a listen.
I can make a joke about classical music as well. You know, yeah. I'm not hung up about it.
Who is the best at classical music?
Who's the best at classical music? The best at classical music is probably Daniel Barenboim.
Oh yeah,
because he can play the piano and he conducts an orchestra.
Right. Can he write it though? Does he write on to stuff as well? It's harder to write it than play it, isn't it?
I don't know. Ask Mr. Barenboim.
I will ask him.
I don't
know. I'm going to get him on next week.
Yeah.
I think he'll be disappointed he came. I don't really. It's going to be, are you the best at classical music?
He'll be full of bitter remarks about other conductors and that party that he has to go to every Christmas. The conductor's party he has to go to.
So we'll talk about something that people... What about the... I think people would be more interested in the pot noodle advert you did with Peter Bainham. I was hoping to get... Peter's in the country on and off at the moment. Yeah. I was really hoping to get him on for the last 50 minutes
of
this.
We could have recreated it.
Yeah, to talk about how you put it... We nearly had him on in the last series because he was in and out of the country. Mm. And I watched them all again.
You make him sound like some kind of... like he's on the run.
Maybe he is. He's changed a lot, hasn't he? He's a different kind of man now. He's in LA. Doesn't eat chicken lollies anymore. What do you remember about the two gorgeous? Did you write it and direct it?
We devised it together. They came up with this brief, which was, I'm trying to remember now, it's such a long time ago.
As if you don't read it every night and laugh at your hilarious. Too gorgeous.
Yeah.
He said, too gorgeous.
That's right.
It's really funny.
The advertising agency were told by Potnood we'd like to kind of get across the fact that they're actually healthier than people think they are. And the ad agency thought, well, no one's going to believe that, so why don't we come up with a mock campaign that Potnood are saying how healthy they are, and then have this character, Peter Bainham, trying to subvert it by saying, no, they're not, they're really bad for you. And I'm very proud of the fact that we did get out on Christmas Day an advert where it says, Port Noodle, they're really bad for you. but only went out once, and then I think somebody made a phone call and it was taken off.
Weren't you not allowed to say, wasn't there a thing saying, that what's all this about? You weren't allowed to say, Pot Noodle is nutritious, because the advertising standards came back and said, it isn't nutritious.
Yeah, and there were things you couldn't say, like you couldn't have a go at, like broccoli. Because the broccoli marketing board were very powerful.
Yeah.
Or, you couldn't... It was like attacking another brand, in a way. So we had to say things like, leaves and... green leaves and things like that. But you just think, well, you make an advantage of your what the limitations are, and you just play about with that, really. Yeah. You know?
You do work on quite a lot of adverts. You did the post office one.
Post office one with Bill Oddie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was he?
Bill Oddie and Westlife. not in the same. No, Bill Oddie, we had to have Bill Oddie in, what do you call it, a hide, and then like 500 ducks suddenly had to appear, right? And in another one, Westlife, we just had to get them to say things, but... After every take, Westlife would just separate, go off in like four or five different directions. and have their makeup and then come back again. And it was literally easier to herd 500 ducks than Westlife.
Was Bill Oddie good to work with?
He was good. He was very he was very jolly. Okay. He was good actually. Yeah.
I'd quite like to go. I don't know if all the goodies are still with us.
Yes.
I'd quite like to get the goodies on here.
Good yum yum.
They are. They're good.
Yes.
But I don't know. Are they still friends? I've met Graham Garden the other day.
Yeah. He's quite shy.
He is very shy.
Yeah.
But when he opens up a little bit and he's got lots of interesting.
Yeah.
Stories.
He's funny. Yeah. He's funny. Yeah. I don't know if they all still hang out together.
I think him and Tim do.
Go tricycling.
Yeah. Well, they sold their bike to those the other guys. Oh God, I'm too ill to remember the name of their group. That's ridiculous.
Show.
The Trap. That's right. The Trap. The three guys that do a podcast and a sketch shows up.
Right,
okay. So they bought the bike. It wasn't worth getting there for. Never mind. Yeah. We'll edit it out. So let's go back to the young Armando Iannucci in Glasgow as a youngster. Yeah. Your dad ran a pizza factory.
Yes.
What's that?
Why are you laughing? What do you mean, what's that? It's a factory that makes pizzas.
You just make them in an oven at the back of the shop.
What's that? It's a pizza factory. What's that? Well, I've just told you it's a pizza factory. Why do you keep saying, what's that?
How many pizzas?
The clothes in the pizza factory.
Well, it's a kitchen, isn't it?
No. This was
a
production line of it wasn't like a huge factory, but it had kind of like a kind of
have an oven in it. And you made up two pizzas a day.
It had a kind of Heath Robinson like long machine.
Yeah.
And the dough would come on at the start, and then the tomato would go on at the tomato base, and then the ingredients would spill onto it, and then it would go under
how you make a pizza. It's like,
well, you asked how it worked, you know what I mean? I'm struggling to come up with anything more exotic than the fact it was a factory that made pizzas.
Did you work at the pizza factory in the summer?
In the summer, yes.
What job did you do?
Oh, just...
which bit were you in charge of?
Just packing. I was quite young then.
Yeah. And so you've got this, you're an Italian family.
Yes.
Living in Scotland.
Yes. Quite a lot of Italians in Glasgow and Edinburgh. It's a big
Italian. Well, Glasgow's got a very big immigrant population of all kinds, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Actually, very.
And it was because it used to be a shipbuilding centre. So and in the olden days, in the pre-internet days, people would travel by ship. So and my so my dad after the Second World War he everyone's looking for work and you go by boat. So his boat got into Glasgow. And there are jobs there.
Was the pizza factory there and he worked in it, or did he go, I'm going to build a pizza factory?
No, he came up with it. So that's why a lot of them settled in Glasgow. Why you get a big Italian community in Cardiff as well.
Yeah.
Anywhere where there's been like heavy industry.
So do you feel more Scottish or more Italian or as some man with no country in between?
I don't know. I mean, it was interesting. We've been through so many referenda, but when the Scottish referendum happened, I lived in London. You know, I didn't want Scotland to vote for independence because I just suddenly thought, I'll feel homeless. I'll feel, that's my home. Yeah. But I don't like the idea of suddenly being a foreigner in England. And now that the other referendums, I'm very confused.
Yeah.
Just all my layers of identity have just been stripped off. And there is no, you know, small husk of a kind of pure Englishman at the bottom of it, I'm afraid.
No.
So it's just empty. So I don't know. I don't know what I am or where.
And the whole thing was set up just to annoy you. Let's get in Scotland, but out of Europe.
Yeah, that Liam Fox, he's had it in for me right from the start. Yeah, the prick.
So we'll talk about politics. Mm-hmm. Tell you what you should do. You should do think of it about Brexit.
Yeah.
So that's what you can have that. You can have that, like I gave you Alan Partridge.
How would it work?
Yeah, you can have it.
How would it?
I don't get like some of the characters from the thick of it, and they're talking about
what would happen in it.
Well, just trying to work.
What would happen different from what actually happened?
Trying to work out how to leave the EU.
Yeah.
Be good. And then Doctor Who comes in and goes, "Fuck you off, you fuck off."
That's the first 2 minutes. And then they realise that the ballot paper has got a misprint on it, and it says no and no. So, and oh my God, and should they let it out, or should they keep it quiet? And then Ollie gets drunk in a pub and admits it, and a reporter publishes it as a story. And soon
my idea, this, remember? my idea.
Soon the press are furious, and Malcolm plants a rumour that are all started by the man who first came up with the word no. So they trace his great-great-great-grandson to a small house in Perth. Not Perth, Australia. Perth in Scotland, which just complicates matters. And so the press are camped outside the small house in Perth saying, why did you fuck up the referendum with your double no ballot paper? And the minister says, I think we got away with it. Only to discover that she had a microphone on when she said that. And it was broadcast across Times Square and via the International Space Station to Vladimir Putin, who launches a nuclear strike.
That's the first 5 minutes. Literally that easy. See, that's why you should do it.
Yeah, it's easy. I've just done it.
Yeah,
great.
It's good.
It writes itself.
Is it? But it's like, you know, I mean, I know you wouldn't want to go back to that anyway, but do you feel that the world events have overtaken satire to an extent that's impossible?
Just, I don't know what to... I said this the other day, I just can't... I don't find Donald Trump funny. I don't find him funny. I find him appalling. I can only think of appalled things to say about it. There is that stage of we've gone into this slightly fictional world, really. There's no need to have things like think of it and so on. Yeah. Because what's on the telly and the news feels fictional. I mean, like you said at the start, you know, and I berate you for this, saying I'm tempted to vote for him just to see what happens. I think that's what a lot of people do.
Maybe.
Because they're so pissed off and they're so, you know, we haven't been listened to. Let's just vote for it and see what happens.
Isn't that what's happening with all the elections? It's people saying, I don't like what's going on, so I'm going to, I'll give you a bloody nose by voting for this guy who's going to the exact opposite of what
Who's
going to. I mean, Trump has somehow managed to make himself identify as being some kind of outsider, billionaire outsider.
Like this Bruce
week,
Wayne.
Yeah, even this week, after his appalling kind of
Bruce Wayne in a Donald Trump suit that can misogynize someone from 50 yards.
Even after his appalling appearance in this debate, he's still at 45% of the people.
It is extraordinary.
I mean, that's just terrifying.
What's more terrifying is like not so much watching it. I do watch the debate. I thought it would be awful to watch, and it was kind of mesmerising about how awful it is. You know, it's like watching a horror movie where you keep watching.
Yeah.
But read the transcript. Read the word for word transcript, because that is bleak, because it's just random words. The sentences that go on, you know, through centuries and just don't reach any... It's, you know, and every now and then, you know, there's a great wadge of stuff from him. You know, I gotta tell you, we, the computers, cyber China, I tell you, she didn't do it. I'm the one, because I gotta tell you, and believe me, we've gotta, you know, and there's that for like half an hour, right? And then you just read Hillary Clinton, did you just hear that? I tell you, you know, then it goes back to, she didn't, you know, I got, you know.
It was his microphone, though.
So it's
the same for me. I sound really croaky in this because George, our sound guy, is not very good.
Yeah.
And he was saying how Hillary Clinton's going to get the vote of every sound guy now.
And there are a lot of them in America. Said, was it that the sound was blocking out every other word?
It could be.
Which is why it sounded so incoherent. Oh,
no, my product placement's fallen over.
Okay. Do you have to actually do an advert then?
We'll talk about it in a bit. Okay. It's not really an advert. I'm going to discuss it with you, and you can say what you think about it. That's
an
advert. You can say this is shit if you want.
Okay.
And then the man who's in the audience who brought the stuff along goes, "Oh, I paid $300."
There's a very good American podcast, political podcast called 5:38, which is Nate Silver and his you know, wonks who look at the polls and try and work out how the race is going. But they have to read out an advert in the middle of it. Right. And it's for pants. It's for underpants. But it's a serious advert. But it's not like they've got someone in to do the voiceover. They can't afford a kind of...
No.
So they have to do it themselves.
Yeah.
So they do a kind of... So where do you think... Do you see in Pennsylvania the swing? There's the under 30 voters who are not coming out for Hillary Clinton. And yet you've got the white, uneducated male, blue-collar workers who are very demonstrative of their support for Trump. In a minute. But first, have you ever considered your underpants? You want to feel comfortable, you want to feel warm when it is cool, you want to feel a little bit more enclosed when it's a little bit breezy. Well, we... You know, yeah.
And then, they're not even allowed to make hang-to-the-left jokes.
No. And you can just hear in the background all the other policy experts just going...
Well, that's partly why I've always resisted before, but hopefully the things we've chosen to be,
smartly, appropriate.
Well, not appropriate, but just...
Inappropriate.
Well, just weird, hopefully, so we'll see how it goes. And I wanted to talk, I didn't know about this, but I was fascinated talking to Graham Lennon about something similar, that with the thick of it, there was an American Party before Veep, which sort of extension of the thick of it, or another way of looking at it, but there was an actual American attempt at the thick of it.
Yes.
With Oliver Platt.
Oliver Platt
Three
was, Malcolm, was Malcolm Tucker.
Right.
And Ollie was turned to a girl, and Christopher Guest directed it.
Yeah.
And Mitch Hurwitz, who did Arrested Development,
showrun
it. So what could possibly go wrong? And it was tedious. What happened was it got sold to ABC, who are one of the big mainstream networks but owned by Disney. So there was no swearing. It was all conventional. I do like how you just laugh at the idea right from the word go.
Yeah. So how could you do the thing of it without swearing?
I know. And I was. This was my first taste of America, actually. Yeah. My first trip to LA. And I was flown over. We're so excited to see you. Sony were making it. It was show around Sony. I sat in the house that Gone with the Wind features in Gone with the Wind, which is a set of offices there.
Right.
So it's all very exciting. And I got a lot of what someone later told me is called depressed hyperbole, which is what you get in meetings in Los Angeles, which is depressed hyperbole, which is you go into a meeting and there's someone by a big desk who just goes, "We're so thrilled to have you. It's such an honor to meet you. We're just big fans of your work." And you realize that's the fourth, you're the fourth person that they've had that meeting. And so I thought, oh, it's all very exciting and they're good to have me. And then I didn't hear anything from them again. And they went and made the thing without my involvement. And then,
so, I mean, that happened with Graham. So I can't understand how that is even allowed to happen.
No, I don't think it would now. I don't think it would. I think it happened at a time when, and this was a BBC thing, they were just so excited to be speaking to someone in America that they sold it for £1. I think they sold it for some beads and some a shell. I got given a shell saying, this is your cut of what we've sold America the thick of it for this. And a potato and stuff. I don't think that happens now, but that's what happened at the time. But it was interesting because it was I learned from it, and I actually put it into In the Loop, which was the thick of it movie, where all the British politicians go to America and think they're going to have some kind of say in the war, and then realise they've been utterly shafted and then ignored. And that was really based on my trip to LA.
It's sort of weird, especially with your stuff, because I think your stuff so much depends on you and you being like in the way the old days it used to work. They go, "Hey, here's the money. Go and make what you want to make, and let's see what it is."
Yeah,
it seems to be what you've done from the start. You've gone off and done your own thing,
but it came good in the end because in amongst those initial conversations, I spoke to HBO.
Yeah,
then went and did In the Loop, and then HBO got in touch. Heard that thick of it wasn't happening in America. Yeah. And I mean, for In the Loop, we had to get a letter from Sony saying we could make a film with Malcolm Tucker in it.
Right.
Because the BBC had sold them, like, the character, you know, I mean, just, you know, for a little bag of tobacco. Who still sits on the Director General's desk, you know, the little bag of tobacco from Sony. and HBO said, look, you know, we want to do a show about Washington.
Yeah.
We saw it in the look, we like the thick of it. But they very much were like the BBC were, HBO. They very much would get the people in there and then we just let them get on with
it.
So that's when we made Veep. So it sort of came good in the end.
It's weird, though, isn't it? It's weird that, that these incredibly intelligent people who worked on massive hits kind of don't get how that it works.
But there's a lot of that, though, isn't it? I think it's the sheer numbers involved as well, because there are so many people there, and they're all called vice presidents, so vice president programming, vice president, you know, scheduling and commissioning, development, all that. And they all have to justify their job, really. And I don't think they have much to do, because when you're making a show, you're busy. But when you're going, let's have a show about politics, that you're not really busy. That's just that one sentence. And then you invite everyone to do. Then the next thing is you've got to invite everyone who's done anything about politics to a meeting, because you don't want to be fired if your boss says, have you had that guy in for a meeting? So you have to have everyone in for a meeting, which is why you end up having the meetings with this tone of, we're so excited, because you're just, you know, you're the 101 person that they're seeing. So there's a lot of that going on. But the interesting thing I found about HBO is they're tiny, they're small.
Yeah.
I only had to deal with one person, really. They're a very small outfit.
Yeah. Was it an ambition yours to go to America?
I don't think it was an ambition, no. I've always been fascinated by American comedy and American politics. And I've always admired, you know, stuff that HBO does and also AMC. So it was great that they, you know, made the approach. And I thought, this is really exciting. But I think it was the project and the people involved in it that was the
exciting. Were you out with Veep for 4 years or 5 years?
It was probably on the whole 5 years, because we do a pilot first and get that going, and then you come back.
And you were coming back and forth.
That was a crazy thing. I was commuting. Not all year. They were really good, actually, because it was all the thick of it writers, all the thick of it directors, and we edited it in London, we wrote it in London. The cast came out to London to rehearse it.
Right.
But in the end, we'd shoot it in Columbia, which is halfway between Baltimore and Washington, so it was on the East Coast, which was better than the West Coast because it's just easier to fly to. But also, it allows you to go into Washington to shoot sort of exteriors and stuff like that. But it's, you know, it's 5 hours time difference and it is flying. And I try to do like 2 weeks out there, 1 week back. And after about 3 years of it, I could tell that I was just a zombie, you know, not just out there, but at home as well. So that's when I decided to. After the fourth season, I would stop.
So you've sort of walked away from it completely.
I mean, they asked, do you want to stay on? And I thought, you know, for new guys taking over, they ought to take over. You know, everyone needs to know who's in charge. Because that's the other thing. If there are too many people around, I think that's where the problems with these other shows happen, is there's too many people sort of in charge. So no one quite knows who the ultimate person is in charge.
Yeah.
And therefore decisions get fudged and so on. So I thought it was important that that Dave Mandel, who took over as showrunner, was in charge and felt he was in charge, and the cast felt he was in charge, and the writers felt in charge. You know,
it's an amazing idea that no one had that idea before for Veep. It sort of seems like
set in the vice president.
A sitcom set around the vice president. I suppose in the West Wing they kind of had the vice president as a character,
as a little, but not very much.
Yeah,
it's
but
interesting.
It seems the most obvious.
The pilot of the West Wing was really meant to be about what's his name? Not Josh, not CJ, not what's his name?
Sam Seaborn.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sam, it was really meant to be about him, Sam Seaborn, who was like the deputy speechwriter.
Yeah.
And Martin Sheen just sort of bobbed in and out in the background. But of course, everyone watched it and go, I want to know more about him. That guy over there, he's in charge. I want to know more about. So then it became about the president.
Yeah. You know?
And I suppose we were looking for a comic idea behind it. So the idea, and I read this amazing book, Robert Caro has written this huge biography of Lyndon Johnson, and it's an extraordinary book. I mean, he's now written, it's like 4,000 pages, and Johnson has just become president. So we've still got Vietnam to go through, you know. But he's still writing the next volume now. But it is an amazing... it's a gripping account of someone who's very, very, you know, from day one wants to be president, is trying to work out how to be president, and, you know, rises up, becomes a congressman, becomes a senator, becomes chief majority leader in the Senate, gets enormous reform enacted, becomes the most powerful figure after the president.
Yeah.
And then John F. Kennedy becomes president. So he thinks, what do I do now? I'll become vice president, because on balance, one in four vice presidents become president.
Right. Okay.
That's the math he did. And it worked out. And so I thought, that's really
good. Yeah, it did.
And it worked out. You know, Kennedy is like swings and roundabouts, really. You know, it's sort of, you know, you win some, you lose some. And
in a way, it was lucky he wasn't president, wasn't it, the first time? Yeah. In a way.
Yeah.
You thought, oh, that was a shame. Oh, no, it worked out quite well. Yeah, for me, not being president at that time.
So, kids, if you want to make it in life, latch yourself onto someone who's going to be killed. No, but what was interesting about that was there was a powerful figure, because he just ran the Senate. Suddenly, when he was vice president, reduced to being this guy who they sometimes forgot to invite to meetings, who was literally drumming his fingers on, you know, waiting for stuff, waiting for the president to ring up, and you know, emasculated. And yet, people were still had to reserve a little bit of respect for him, because you never know.
Yeah.
And in fact,
yeah.
So and we talked to, when we were researching, we talked to a guy who was chief of staff for Joe Biden and previously for Al Gore, and he said, yeah, it's that thing of America's all about winning, about coming number one, and yet if you're vice president, you're more or less going around with a badge saying number two all the time, and it can be demeaning. And you sort of, he said, you know, when you come into a room, people will laugh at you about you as you leave, but not in front of you, because one day you might be president.
Yeah.
You know? So there's that kind of, and I thought that's quite a funny.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Especially if we make her a former senator and she was once powerful, and you know, she's not a complete idiot. You know, she has been elected. And she has been successful, but suddenly she's got nothing to do. And yet, there's that ambition, and the big things are happening next door, and how can I get next door? So that was the starting point for it.
Yeah, I mean, but I suppose what's interesting about it is there's that perfect scenario there, mm-hmm. and yet no one had thought to do it. It's kind of encouraging as a comedy writer to go, oh, there are, because there's so many people trying to think up the perfect sitcom or the perfect situation.
I think that's
such a good, you know, it's such a.
Also, after Dick Cheney, it no longer became a joke, a kind of bog-standard joke about the president. You know, they could be powerful and they could be influential.
Yeah.
And maybe that was then why it felt like a good place to set it, really.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Not many interviewers do that, do they? They're sarcastic. It was interesting.
This could be a new section. In the new series, there should always be a very interesting
one. That's very interesting.
Where you stroke your chin. And there's just a little slight awkward pause.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com.
Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, that's why I have emergency questions now, Amanda. I foolishly, for one of the Kickstarter awards, said I'd do a book of 500 emergency questions. I thought that'd be easy to do. Yeah. I've started writing it. I've written all the ones down in this book and about three more. Uh-huh. And there's 103 so far.
Okay.
It's quite hard to... And then I've got to come up with loads more for individuals. Yeah. I'm an idiot. But here's some of my new ones. If you were granted the powers of a King Midas, but could choose what everything was going to turn into... What would everything turn into in Armando Iannucci's King Midas world?
I think either carrot.
carrot.
Because carrots, I like carrot. Raw carrot, not cooked carrot. Okay. Carrot is useful.
Well, also, if it's raw, you can cook it.
You can.
And if it's cooked, you can't make it raw.
I know. You should get the Nobel Prize for physics and chemistry. So carrot or. Trifle. It has to be trifle. Chocolate.
You know, but then everything would turn into it, and all you'd touch your wife and she'd turn
But that's
into
the essential Midas problem.
It is a problem. I've come up with a solution. Everything I would touch would turn into what it was, but holding some diamonds that they would then give to me.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what King Midas should have got.
Yeah.
Have you ever killed someone but never spoken about it? And would you like to speak about it now?
Yes and no.
If you have killed, don't talk about it. That's well done, Armando. You didn't fall into my trap.
He had a slightly, I don't know, it was a slightly forgiving look on his face.
Yeah.
As the final shard of glass.
You've given away too much.
Went in his eye.
The police can work that out.
This guy from Eggheads, right.
Yeah. CJ from Eggheads.
CJ from Eggheads.
Not his real name.
No. Isn't he meant to be clever?
Well, I mean, out of all the Eggheads. Eggheads is quite an easy quiz because they give you all the answers.
Well, that's rubbish.
You get a multiple choice, and any decent quizzer can work out.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would be a good quiz if there were no choices. But he's pretty bad at it still. Okay. Usually it's him at the back. When it's the final round, it's usually him sitting behind going, we're going to take out CJ from like, what's the point? You let him stay in there. Am I right? I'm thinking people, a lot of CJ fans, and since he's murdered someone, you like him, man. I used to joke about it and go, yeah, he's an idiot. Now he's dangerous, Rich. He could
push you in a canal. Have you ever killed anyone?
No, well, apart from possibly this little girl that I've mentioned before that I dreamt about. I had a dream last night that I was, that I was in the 12 Disciples. And I can't remember which one it was, but then Jesus was talking and we couldn't quite hear him in the back, and I said, this is like in life. It was just when we were meeting him for the first time.
in sort of prison like end of year Christmas shows and talent shows and stuff, do you think the murderer does observational comedy about murder?
They should do. It'd be good. Because to other murderers, it would work. To a crowd like this,
I mean, there would be an audience going, I know exactly what you mean. I know. That's awkward, that bit, isn't it?
Here's another one.
Yeah.
Another new one. Do you think the Tim Allen film, The Santa Claus, could ever happen in real life?
I don't think it has happened. What happens in Tim Allen's
Santa Claus? From memory, Santa Claus gets knocked off a roof and dies. Uh-huh. Spoiler alert. And then the real Santa Claus. And then Tim Allen, who's just a bloke with a and he's divorced, but he's trying to get on with his kids, but you know they don't identify with him because he's Tim Allen. free Buzz Lightyear toys as well, he gets, but it doesn't help. And he becomes Father Christmas, slowly turns into Father Christmas and then becomes Father Christmas, and that's how Father Christmas is.
I was talking to someone today today, just not long before we came in, about what happens. There must be someone who still believes that it's Father Christmas.
Yeah.
And then has children. and then is fully expecting their child to be given presents by Father Christmas. So is then shocked on Christmas morning when Father Christmas hasn't come.
And assumes his child's been naughty and punished.
Must be naughty, yeah. That must have happened. Must that have happened?
No.
not even in America? Yeah.
Well, maybe like a 12-year-old has had a child. So that could have... But I think, you know, once they've gone through whatever that happened, to make that happen, they've probably lost their innocence.
Sure, there's some community somewhere that still believes in Father Christmas all the year round.
Some community? There's a community? Yeah. You've got to raise the stakes from one person to now a community of people who are just saying, definitely he is. I know he hasn't been for 100 years, but not he's like, coming, you have to believe. We're not believing
I'm
enough.
I'm saying, not like, and I'm not having a go at the Amish community, but, you know, like the Amish, you know, dress and that.
You are having a go at
I'm
the
not
Amish
having
group.
A go.
They're, no, I don't believe in Father Christmas.
No, I'm not saying, rather
buttons.
Like there is that community. Yeah. There may well be in some other state in America.
Think we wouldn't have heard of this Father Christmas.
A community that genuinely believes that Father Christmas exists and they till the fields dressed as elves. and, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm just... We don't know. I'm going to go.
Well, I think.
See, if this was Donald Trump, he'd say, we don't know. We don't. Could be, possibly. Nobody knows. Nobody. You know what I mean. You know what I mean.
Well, I was thinking.
China.
Because people say about conspiracy theories. In fact, I say this about conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
That one of them must be true. You know, the others are, you know, they're out of all the moral enough to be true.
Yes.
So out of all the childhood stuff.
Yes.
One of them must be true. So the Easter Bunny, maybe, or the Tooth Fairy.
Tooth Fairy.
Yeah.
Father Christmas.
The
Penny for the Guy.
Yeah. The Harvest.
That's it. There are no more.
The Michaelmas Mouse.
The Special. Yeah.
Because one of them turned out, the Tooth Fairy could be real.
The Pancake Camel.
Someone was telling me they had to tell their 11-year-old child. I was a friend of a friend, so I got it second hand. But someone said their 11-year-old child still believed in Father Christmas, and they felt, we have to tell them. And then they said, and they took it quite bad. He went, it's okay. But at least we've still got the Easter Bunny. And then went, oh no.
That's all made up.
It's a shame.
It was a man who rose from the dead.
Very strange. Let's do some product placement, Amanda. Look, this is a perfect man.
Richard, what have you got for us this week?
I want to see what people think about this. This is something. I've got to get the actual right name of it because I don't want to get it wrong. Because that's the part of being in the world of advertising. Yes. You should know this.
You've got to get the name right.
That's the main thing. This is from spinelessclassics.com. Mm. What this is, Amanda? What do you think about this? This is like a poster. But it's of an entire book. This one is 1984. That is the whole text of 1984 on a poster.
Up on a board. That's handy, Richard.
Yeah. If you've got a magnifying glass, you can read 1984.
When I'm on the train but don't have a copy of the paperback, I can always get out my hard, large card oblong. And read it, causing minimum discomfort to the commuters on either side of me.
I think it's for display purposes, really. But
why would you want to display 1984? What purpose?
To keep warning people about its message.
Okay.
Because you might forget if it's just on a bookshelf, but if it's up there on the wall, go, oh yeah, we better watch out for totalitarian governments.
Yes.
Although, if everyone had one of these, maybe Donald Trump wouldn't be doing so well. That is my point.
Okay, but although you say all of 1984 is up there on it, it is illegible.
Well, I've got very bad eyesight, so I can't tell. All I know is this bit, these three columns. I mean, it's impossible to believe that a whole book could get on like that, isn't it? But it is. That's the whole thing.
Those three columns are that really
That's
boring.
What they want you to think.
Do you remember the boring bit in the middle? The 984, there's like a
Winston
tree.
Smith and he's...
Yeah, it's there. It's three columns worth. Fucking hell. So, and there's that one. Is of see if you can guess what that one is. It's James Bond. And that one is...
James Bond, did you say?
Yeah, James Bond. And that one is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, see?
Oh, wow.
So there you go. So you can get those online. They're very nice. And
Hang on.
No, what?
What do you mean you can get those online?
Get them in. There's loads
okay.
of
Okay. And then do what with them?
Put them on your wall.
Put them on your wall?
You're meant to help me. Don't let the man's in who made that. He's been going for 5 years. He's really nice.
I don't care.
It's findthisclassics.com. He gave us £300 to make this. You know, that's paid for George, the incompetent Sandman, who's broken his arm.
Oh.
He fell off a bike. incompetent even
so
in
he's
his...
trying to record...
He was on a Brompton bike. Uh-huh. You know, the ones that fold up.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, and it just unfolded.
Did he end up in a little kind of 1 foot square compacted metal and rubber contraption?
It's good that, don't it? That
no, it's a good idea. It's a very good idea. It's good. Yeah, it's very good idea.
He needs like if 10 people buy him, then he's all right. He's made some money. So
yeah, no, I'm not knocking it.
You wanted to be a Catholic priest.
Very briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, you wanted to be one very briefly, or you wanted to?
No, very briefly. I wanted to. At school, yeah. I was a Jesuit school,
yeah.
So it was a very Catholic school, and they were very good actually. They were very sort of free-minded and let us kind of ask lots of, you know, they didn't ram down our throat. And I suppose I was. I'm so sorry.
They ask politely, "Will you? Will you take this in your mouth, Armando?" The holy body of Jesus.
Yeah, and this. That it's on. but eventually I just thought, this is rubbish. No, I don't.
Good.
There we are.
Would you have been a good Catholic priest?
I don't know. I mean, it was all the poverty, chastity, and obedience thing, yeah. Really. And the poverty's not. I could have. You know, I wasn't. I'm not really into some luxuries. It's the chastity and obedience, yeah. Really.
That put you off.
Threw me off. Yeah. Really. So and I just thought, you know, once you hit a certain age, you think, no, that's bollocks.
Yeah.
Really. No. Although I do. I'm still interested in. I do admire people who are. I'm not going to say religious, but who are spiritual, you know, who, you know, are keen to try and come up with a way of life that implies there is something a little bit better than just us getting through the day.
Yeah.
Really?
There isn't, though, is that?
No, I know, but it's nice to con them into right. thinking that...
There's like communities of people who still believe in Catholicism.
Yeah, and Father Christmas.
Yeah, Father Christmas.
In that certain state in America.
Yeah. You have written... Are you writing a thing about artificial intelligence now? Is that your next project?
It's a script. It's a comedy, a movie
yeah.
about artificial intelligence. And
is it about having sex with robots?
No, there's no sex with robots, no.
Okay.
No. It's really more based on the premise... You know these... If you go on YouTube and you look at robots now, they're rubbish. They are. I mean, they sort of fall over and can't pick things up, you know. But the premise really is, what if they're... Software was brilliant, so their minds are just, you know, streets ahead of us. But the hardware is still that, and yet they decide now's the time to strike. That's it. Because, you know, the brain is saying, kill all humans, subjugate them. Not kill them, subjugate them.
Yeah.
But physically...
They've just gone too soon. This
yeah, they've just gone too soon. They should have waited. Yeah. So that's the premise. So that's written. So I'm just in the next process of...
And you've just completed another film?
I've just finished a film called The Death of Stalin.
Okay.
Which, rather like The Pizza Factory, the clue is in the title. Yeah.
It is... I haven't got to that bit in history yet, so I'm annoyed you've given away the ending of that.
Yeah, one. Yeah, yeah. 1953, Stalin died.
Okay.
And it's about what happens when he dies and the power struggle going on in the Kremlin to who takes over. Steve Buscemi is Khrushchev, and Simon Russell Beale is Lavrenti Beria, who's the villain, the head of all the secret police and the torture and stuff like that. And Michael Palin is Molotov, and Paul Whitehouse is in it, and Andrea Riseborough, and
Brilliant. When's that
Jeffrey
gonna...
Tambor is great. Jeffrey Tambor is Malenkov, who takes over from Stalin and is no good. Just a rubbish Stalin.
Yeah.
It's all based on true.
It's hard to follow Stalin, though, isn't it?
Very difficult act to follow. Yeah. He is the Morecambe and Wise of single dictators.
Often with dictators, you don't get to follow them because they fuck up and that's the end. Like, so there's no one had to really follow Hitler in a...
No. No,
well, there was the guy, wasn't there, for a couple of weeks who took
didn't,
over.
Yeah.
We don't really remember him.
And the interesting thing is, you know, Stalin was, you know, responsible for millions of deaths, you know, maybe as many as Hitler, yet somehow he's kind of got away with it in that you can joke about Stalin or that whole, the whole language around that time. You can say to someone, come on, comrade, you know, but you can't say to someone, you Nazi. It's just... You know, that scene is like toxic, and yet Stalin somehow is seen as fortunately, as the subject of a light-hearted look at the events. So that we shot that in the summer, and I'm in the middle of editing that now.
Cool. Yeah. And when will that be out? 2017?
Yes. I think the idea is to May, June, something like that next year.
That's good. And there was another thing that I wanted to talk to you about.
What might that be?
Don't know. I'm surprised I've got through this far, to be honest. I'll talk about something else that wasn't nowhere. Oh, we both wrote for Up to Something. Our comedy paths have crossed about three times.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
There was the Shane Ritchie, David Schneider, Mike Haley vehicle.
Yes,
from 1990,
yes.
I'd say.
Yeah.
Do you remember much about working on that?
No. I don't think I actually wrote for it. I think David...
He did the same to me, one of my jokes.
Yeah.
And then said and gave me £50.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. That's all right. Very good.
Anyone remember Up to Something?
Nope.
Shane Ritchie? Remember it, might come up on Pointless.
Yeah. What else is in your book?
Well, there's all sorts of things. Your dad owned a pizza factory.
Yeah.
Other than you, at 14, you went to the library to read Hansard.
Yes.
Yeah. You were quite a nerdy.
I'm very nerd. I know. I was very nerd. Very uncool. Very, you know, not into, like, fashion or nothing like that. And I sort of resented it. I think that's part of why I wanted to go into comedy. I hated the way that, you know, society could bully you into wearing a certain type of clothes or listening to certain type of music, and I just didn't like that.
Yeah.
So I kind of just thought I just want to do my own.
Yeah.
And I still hate labels. You know, I hate the idea of people being labelled as such. Apart from idiots who believe in Father Christmas, or people who support Donald Trump. Yeah.
I'm sure it's true of a lot of comedians.
Yeah.
I mean, that comedians are quite nerdy, but also that kind of, because that sort of thing bothered me.
But do you not think the thing that I loathe now is that comedians are now cool, aren't they?
Yes,
there's a kind of old generation of sort of trendy, kind of cool comedians.
I resent it.
Yeah,
because it's not that was not us.
That wasn't our world. No. We weren't offered that choice.
No, we were uncool, and that's how we got out of it.
Yeah.
We did comedy.
Yeah,
you can't be cool through comedy. Yeah, it's true. It does annoy me.
We should kill them.
We should. What was your favourite bit of Hansard that you would?
No.
So Hansard's the right, just
it's,
what's
it's
happened
the transcript
in Parliament,
of what happened in the House of Commons. It was before.
It's turned out to be good for you in the end.
But it was before there were cameras, television cameras in the House of Commons, and I was just interested in certain debates, like when when the government fell on a vote of no confidence and Margaret Thatcher laid into James Cameron. I just was quite interested to read. Actually happened in it, really.
Did you have posters of Malcolm Rifkin on your wall and that kind of thing?
No, I didn't.
I got to look round Cecil Parkinson's house a week before he died.
Have the police spoken to you about this?
I saw Cecil Parkinson on New Year and he died in January, didn't he?
Right.
Because I'm looking for a house. I went and looked around his house.
Oh, I see.
He was by surprise. I walked in.
And there he was.
This man came up to me and said, "Hello, I'm Cecil Parkinson." And I looked up and said, "Oh, yeah, you are." He's quite nice. He was quite an avuncular figure. He told me that the well in the village that he lived in times of pestilence, you're allowed to draw one bucket of water out of that well. So I thought, oh, I'll buy a house then. I didn't buy his house. No, it was weird. My wife didn't realise who he was and didn't really know who he was. He's quite... Do you know who Cecil Parkinson is? I mean, he was a very evil... Basically the most sort of evil politician. I mean, he was a very unpleasant man.
Well, he sort of... He has an affair with his secretary.
Yeah.
Is that right? And then... And they had a child. And then he... I don't even know to this day whether he imposed an order on... So it became illegal... even to mention this child.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't allowed to be in school photos at all. So
yeah, and which is why I'm saying I'm not even sure whether what we're doing now...
Is allowed.
Is allowed.
He's dead now, fuck him. Right. So,
I mean, it's an interesting constitutional...
It is.
Minefield.
Our producer can sort it out. He can just put in the beeps again, the Prince Andrew beeps. Yeah, I don't know if you know about Prince Andrew. What he does...
All true, apparently.
It is all true. It is all true. But yeah, it was very... So we were looking around this house. There's like quite a lot of paintings and busts of him. And also there was all the... Up one staircase, there was all the Labour Isn't Working publicity.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And there was like a Christmas card from the Camerons on the mantelpiece. And my wife was slowly kind of looking around going, what the fuck?
I always found myself going around Geoffrey Archer's house.
Oh, really?
He bought who's that poet who got killed in the First World War? Rupert Brooke's house in Grantchester. Is it just outside Cambridge? Is it Grantchester?
That's made up, isn't it? That's from the Archers, isn't it? from Thomas Hardy or something.
I don't know. Anyway, Rupert Brooke's house outside Cambridge, and I was invited to a thing that was nothing to do with Geoffrey Archer. It was just a charity thing. But it was his wife was hosting the event, so it was at their house. So he was around, and you got to wander around his house. And the bathroom downstairs is just full of front pages of magazines about Geoffrey Archer, including the scandals.
Yeah. Was there a brown paper bag full of money behind this toilet system?
But there was look at all the things that we've done,
yeah,
including the scandals, just like paraded for you on the wall. Yeah. I remember, and there was a little bridge going over a pond full of fish.
Right.
And a little girl who we knew came over to us and said, "Oh, that man over there, he's very odd." And I said, "Oh, well, that's Geoffrey Archer. Why?" And she said, "Oh, because I said I like the fish." And he said, "Oh, do you like these fish? Each one of these carp represents a West End musical I put money into." I said, don't go back. Don't speak to him. Step away. We'll find your parents. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
That's blood, brothers.
If the carp dies, does he then replace it with another carp and have to remember which carp is which?
No, the musical is just closed for it. For a day, the lights go out on London's West End.
The mousetrap carp is still alive. That's why they can't get rid of the mousetrap.
Yeah.
It's interesting seeing that. He was horrible, though, Cecil Parkinson.
Yeah.
Well, he never saw his... He had brain damage.
Oh, no, he completely...
That's definitely true.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
I couldn't afford his house, but it was nice to look around.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot. I'm trying to sell my house at the moment, and I think a lot of people just come round just to, like,
to see Richard Herring's house.
That's why I went round to a celebrity chef who I can never remember the name of's house. He's quite famous on telly, and the woman, the estate agent, was all like, "Oh, I think you're going to recognise this guy." I was going, "Excuse me, I am me. I'm not going to be impressed. You should be impressed that you're showing me around this house." But she didn't recognise me from these podcasts for some reason. So no, but
I should have put it on.
I, I think a lot of people, I've had like three or four people come around who come around three or four times and then just go away. And I think they just like to make you think they're going to buy your house.
Okay.
Because they get like, because of the power of it. I don't think it's like, have you ever experienced that? Like, just still three, there's a woman who came around three times, like twice, and you think, oh good, we're going to get an offer, And then just nothing happened. And then we talked to another sage and he said, is it Mrs. Clements or whatever her name was? He said, yeah. And he said, oh, yeah, she came around one of my houses seven times. Seven times.
She also probably goes to lots of funerals and things like that.
Anyway, it's fun having a house, isn't it? So it's nice having a house, isn't it? In 2010, you voted for the Liberal Democrats.
Yeah.
How did that work out?
In 2011, I regretted
Who are you going to vote for now? Now there's nothing in the centre.
I don't know. I mean, that is the problem. I'm confused.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's hard, isn't it?
It won't be for Theresa May. But it's, it will come as no surprise that I tend to be a bit, woolly liberal left of centre, whatever. Yeah. So I gravitate between Labour and Lib Dem. Don't know. No idea. That's the depressing thing, in that politics has sort of fragmented so much. There are three Labour parties now, and there's actually four Conservative parties. There's the hard Brexiters and soft Brexiters and Remainers and Osborne. You know, it's so confusing. And I can see why the number of people who vote in an election has been going down and down for the last 25 years because it's so uninviting, so unappetising, really.
Yeah.
And why a lot of people feel, actually, maybe... I don't agree, but I can see why a lot of people think, forget it. Let's not vote. Let's try and achieve change through some other means.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of... Do you think it needs to be a new... I mean, it feels to me there's a lot of people in the centre, both sides of the centre, who aren't being represented.
Without being a kind of... But I'm going to sound it. A very dry... electoral reformer. I do think fundamentally the problem is we have an electoral system that only works if there are two big, strong, highly popular parties.
Yeah.
And we don't have those now. We've got each party that's not so strong, and the system doesn't work anymore. So you now get, for example, you get a Conservative Party who's elected on, 36% of the vote? That's not very much.
No.
And yet have a majority. Not a big majority, but a majority.
Yeah.
Once you have a majority, you have absolute power. So you give someone absolute power, even though they're only elected by 36% of the population. In the 1950s, Labour and Conservative, used to get 47, 48% of the vote. So therefore, it kind of made sense to have that system. But if you don't have that system now, you can and therefore if 36% of the population vote for the government, it does mean that there's, what's the maths now? There's 64% of people who didn't.
Yeah.
So the majority didn't, which is why you get this increasing level of frustration and disappointment and anger, and nobody quite knows where to direct it. So that's the problem.
Do you think you should stand for government?
No, I'd be terrible. I'd be dreadful because I'm so used to, and it may partially as a result of what I've done in terms of the work I do. You see so many sides to it that I couldn't do that. If I was on Newsnight and somebody said, "What do you think of this?" I'd have to do well on the one hand, but I can see their point too, and you mustn't get, So I'd buckle under that.
Yeah, isn't that a good thing? I mean, I sort of feel like everyone, it's sort of become that if you are consistent, that is an admirable thing.
Yeah.
But I think the consistent people are the ones who fuck everything up on this.
Aren't the people
who are prepared to weigh up both sides and change their mind?
I think decisiveness is overrated. Yeah. I really do. Because I think people who just go, yeah, let's do that. You think, oh, great, they're decisive. But no, they may have just rushed into a decision that is actually bad.
Yeah.
And that was a lot through the 80s. You got people, Margaret Thatcher. I mean, I don't agree with her. I don't agree with her. But she knows what she thinks. She knows what she thinks, And yes, but you don't agree with her. And you see the Trump thing, he just says it like it is. Well, yes, but have you heard what he says? And it's that.
But if Trump doesn't win...
Yeah. I don't think he will win.
But then someone else will next time. I mean, it's sort of like they've realised that the genie's out of the bottle, isn't it? That we don't... The facts are no longer important.
And that's the problem, America now as well, which is, you know, that system only works if it's two big, fairly cohesive parties. But it's not. The Republicans are split and the Democrats are split. So, which is why you get the extremists on the right and you get the Bernie Sanders sort of movement supporters who are looking for an alternative. Because the system is bust. You know, and that's what's happening all over. And the whole Brexit thing is the country sort of articulating that frustration, really.
Yeah.
You know, one way or the other.
Yeah. Shall we get rid of democracy?
No, that has its own problems. As you'll see in my movie, The Death of Stalin, coming out in the cinemas.
Is there only the problem that Stalin wasn't immortal? That's the only... If he'd lived forever, it would...
I mean, they tried to keep him... they tried to preserve his body.
Right.
You know, like Lenin. And do you know this? Because we spoke to the people who are in charge of the preserving.
Right.
And there's little electronic... There's little motors inside pumping it and also fanning it and keeping the temperature right. It's full of electronics.
So. Inside Lenin? Or inside...
Lenin. In Lenin.
No, what happened to Stalin? Is Stalin they re-rotted?
They just pickled him and... shoved him out the back. I think he's making a bit of a resurgence, actually. It's interesting, in Moscow...
He's not coming back, though, is he?
As a robot. In Moscow, because Putin now is very much into... If you go around Moscow, there are statues... You can see portraits of Stalin around and statues of Tsar Nicholas II. So it's like... It's almost like he said, I don't care which... spectrum they're from. If they're authority figures, I want them up there. I want people to get to like authority figures. I just want that idea to sort of seep into their consciousness.
Right.
Authority figures.
Yeah, because the royal family are like saints now to the Russian people.
And the Russian Orthodox Church is very big. And Putin has allied himself with a sort of sect within the Russian Orthodox Church who believe that Moscow is the third Rome.
Right.
You know, Rome moved to Constantinople and then it's moved up to Moscow. And that, and so, you know. Not funny, but...
We're allowed to be educational and interesting.
Yeah.
The thing I was going to ask you about was about another idea you had about internet billionaires. That was another... The kids become young people making lots of money on the internet. You're going to do a sitcom about that?
Yeah, I did. When we wrote Veep, we also wrote a thing about Silicon Valley for HBO. And they said, can we put it to one side at the moment? Because we don't really think the time is quite right for a Silicon Valley sitcom.
Right.
And then 2 years later, I think they were just too polite to say, oh, we've already got one.
Right.
So that was that idea. Right. So I thought, well, no, Silicon Valley. And it's very funny. There's no point in me doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, you were almost trampled by a hippopotamus.
Yeah.
Can't believe I forgot about that.
Believe that you've left that to near the end.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd say that you almost drowned in Mauritius.
Yes. Yes. I tend to nearly die on holiday. Yeah.
You've got to be careful. It's when you're relaxing.
So I was... we were in the Kruger Park in South Africa and we were on a nighttime safari. So you go out at night and there's an open-top jeep and you shine torches into the trees.
Yeah.
And you see the little eyes of, you know, bush babies and, you know, most animals... run away from the light, apart from hippos, who are bastards. And if they see light, they go, what the fuck are you doing? And they charge at you, especially if you've come between them and the water, which we had.
Right.
And the driver he was a big guy, but he immediately, you know, put the thing on and sped off as fast as he could. We got away from it. But he was like shaking at the end of it. He said, I've always wondered what would happen if I saw a hippo at night. And Rich and I, my wife and I, we just thought, God, if we died, what would the funeral be like? Because people would be upset, but on the other hand, we were trampled to death by a hippo.
Yeah.
And that would be... And I think there's a Graham Greene short story about a guy... whose father got killed by a pig falling on him.
Right.
And has never quite come to terms with the fact that people don't take his father's death seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, that's, you know, I worry about dying in an embarrassing way.
Yeah. What's your favourite embarrassing way to die?
Well, there's loads of ways. I nearly choked to death on an apricot stone.
Okay.
When I was eating an apricot and just ate the stone by mistake on my own, and just thought that's. I was as it was happening. I was just thinking. I thought I was going to die, and I was just thinking. Oh,
what
stupid, pointless way. So that, and that's not even, you know, that an accident where a hippo attacks you, at least that's not your fault.
No.
And what happened when you were drowning? You nearly drowned?
Drowning. So this was Mauritius. They advertised this thing, you can walk on the seabed. I thought, I'll do that. I've done a little bit of sort of scuba diving before. And what this is, but it's actually, you go out in this boat, and it looked really like Jules Verne. It was like a glass helmet they put on you. And they put leg weights on your belt and your shoes. Yeah. And you sink to the sea. It's not that deep, but you are completely submerged.
You're underwater.
And there's a tube going from the glass helmet up to the boat, sort of pumping in the air. And the idea is on the seabed, there's lots of this coral and there's lots of beautiful fish and you can hold out some food and they all come to you. Except my glass helmet was filling up with water. and therefore, I had less and less oxygen.
Yeah.
And therefore, I went into that kind of drowning state where I was going, oh, I'm drowning, but oh, I can't be bothered. Oh, just somebody sort of... And there was another diver out there who saw it and just, you could see his eyes dart open and he turned a valve and the air came in and the water started. And the thing was, I came back afterwards and Rachel said, so how did you get on? And I said, well, I nearly died. And I was thinking, why aren't you upset? And she was saying, because you didn't. You clearly didn't. You might have nearly died, but you didn't. You know, so that's why I'm not upset. So, yes. So stupid comedy deaths, I nearly...
Do you ever worry that you might have died, and it's like in Sixth Sense, and you're...
And you are...
Well, I could be dead as well, or I could be just doing a practice interview to an empty chair, and you're sitting there and answering...
Well, I mean, I was told when I came here that this interview will go on for 20 years. So it might do.
It's been lovely to talk to you. I think we might have to wrap it. Let me just check. There's nothing else I wanted to ask you. Just talk amongst yourself for a minute. I think we covered it all. That's good. Oh, you abseiled off the John Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford.
That's right, yeah.
Did you nearly die doing that?
Nope.
No? Nope. That's quite dangerous, abseiling down the building.
It's not really.
It could fall off. At least you're in a hospital if it falls off.
Yeah. That was raising money to stop people dying.
Was it? That's nice of you.
Yeah. And when it worked, now nobody dies.
Are there... Are you able to pinpoint any people who are still alive because of you abseiling down that thing?
Well, not you. You're dead.
And, I might be dead. I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
And you're just talking to yourself and that doesn't make sense.
Now, all the people who haven't died as a result of that do have to just pay me 10% of the a tithe every year.
Yeah. I think it'd be nice if you know you've literally saved someone's life to just ring them up every now and go, remember the old abseil I did?
Yeah.
I just wanted to remind you of it.
Just remind you. Just every year for the rest of your life. That's all I'm asking. Just give me some of your money.
10%.
That's all.
Yeah.
You know? Wouldn't want something to happen to you. Like them suddenly forget the cure to that disease. Hey?
Well, it's been lovely. Thank you for
Mr. Iannucci to you.
Thank you for coming back on the show.
It's a pleasure.
Before. It's been lovely to talk to you. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Armando Iannucci.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Now we're in tour. Go away.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show. If you enjoyed it, if you want to see me, that'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.